It actually began right here in Panola in 1866 when Mary MacKillop had come here as a young teacher from Portland. She was a governess at the time with her uncle, Alexander Cameron. They were living out on Panola Station. And she used to come over to Mass to the church here in Panola, and the parish priest at the time was Julian Tennyson Woods. And Mary MacKillop was very conscious that she was teaching the children of a wealthy Scottish pastoralist in Alexander Cameron. But she shared a concern with Julian Tennyson Woods about the lack of education or access to education for the poor. And so in the outcome of their discussions and concern about that was the dream, if you like, of founding a congregation of religious women who would teach the poor. And so they actually began here on the 19th of March, 1866. And Mary MacKillop just began in an old stable, which had been renovated by her brother. And it's now a lovely little reflection park called the Mary MacKillop Memorial Park. And people go there and they can press the button on the bellboy and he tells them the story of that original site and what it was like on the first day that Mary MacKillop began teaching there. She began teaching with her sister, and in the meantime, Father Julian was getting the school built. And so in June 1867, the schoolhouse was opened, and that original schoolhouse is still available for people to come and have a look at today. Inside it, there is a very splendid exhibition of Mary MacKillop's curriculum and her revolutionary teaching method. It was certainly revolutionary for that time. And lots and lots of people come each year to the Mary MacKillop Panola Centre just to find out about that, actually, and to have a look at that method.
What made it revolutionary?
Well, I think it was revolutionary because at the time, the Education Acts in the 1850s, in the state law was that education was to be secular and it was to be free, but there was no denominational kind of religious education. And so Mary MacKillop, that was the main point. She was certainly concerned about children who didn't have access to education, but she was also concerned that they would grow up without knowing anything about God at all. And in fact, the way she taught was to imbue her teaching and the content of what she taught with teaching about God and about the Catholic faith. And so the kind of values that she gave to the children were ones always about respecting the dignity of every single person. No one was turned away from their schools. Those early pioneering sisters were very, very poor themselves. And it was very different because there were other religious congregations around, but they had been founded from Europe, and mainly they, you know, those sisters were living in fairly institutional places, but the Sisters of St. Joseph really lived among the poor themselves, and they went out in twos, they visited the poor, and so we've always felt that they've been very much in solidarity with the people. And so here in Panola, that's one of the lovely things that we've been able to do, just work with the people here and be present to them and with them, just feel as if we belong to this community. It's been my experience over the last 6 years here.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. You've been here for 6 years now, and as you said, the sisters have been here since the beginning, very much a part of the community. How has the role changed, would you say? I mean, that's a broad question, but yes. What does the role look like today, perhaps?
In the beginning, the sisters were, as I said, they were involved in education. That was the primary purpose, and education in schools. Now, that purpose or You know, the reason for the congregation existing has always been education, but now it's changed to embrace education on a much wider kind of perspective. So we have teachers, sisters teaching now at tertiary level and in adult faith formation, and, you know, they teach refugees and they work with the home. So, you know, it's education in the broader sense. But fundamentally now it's about empowering people to be their very best selves in whatever way the sisters can. And so in here at Panola, the sisters were responsible for schools from the very beginning. And there were a couple of times in that 150 years when the sisters weren't here. They were removed, and but they came back. And just prior to our coming here, we had the last sister as the principal of the Mary MacKillop School here. And after that, we've been handing over a lot of our education roles in schools to lay people who do it so beautifully, and that makes us available to do other things. And so when we came here 6 years ago, we were not involved in the school, although the sister who lives with me, Loretta, is she's on the board at the Mary MacKillop College and the Mary MacKillop Memorial School down there, and we get involved in the community here. So a large amount of our time is spent down at the Mary MacKillop Interpretive Centre, supporting all the volunteers there. We just fit in as volunteers. But since the retirement of Mrs. Claire Larkin, who was the coordinator of the centre, we've been caretaking that a little bit. But just in the last couple of weeks, a new coordinator has been appointed, and so, you know, we'll just step back again and take on a volunteer's role there, supporting the other volunteers and certainly supporting the new coordinator. And in the community, and in the parish, we take communion to the aged people up in the hospital. This afternoon, I've just come back from volunteering at Bingo in the hospital. And so we just, you know, get involved in whatever way we can. And that's the way, what the sisters do now, right throughout our congregation. We kind of call it ministry according to gift. So, you know, where people feel that they're called and they're really gifted to do something, then, and there's a need in the community or wherever it is, then we try to respond as much as we can. But these days, of course, we're not able to respond as much as we used to when we had much greater numbers of women around.
Certainly. It's a congregation that is a global congregation.
Yes, it is a global congregation now. So once Mary MacKillop established the school here, she taught here herself just for a few weeks in that schoolhouse down there. And then by that time, Julian Tennyson Woods had been called to Adelaide as the first director of Catholic education. And, of course, he could see, you know, how this curriculum that Mary had worked out and her method was working. And so he asked her to go to Adelaide to open more schools. And so the congregation flourished in those early years. Several schools were opened quite rapidly, and you know, priests were inviting the sisters and pressuring Mary MacKillop to send more and more sisters to their parishes to open up schools, and she did as well as she could. And not only that, you know, those early sisters, they worked in refuges for homeless people, for those who were orphaned and the destitute. And there was a wonderful woman who worked, you know, with the mentally ill and so on. So there've been, you know, all that kind of response to need from the very beginning.
I've read St. Mary MacKillop's story, and yes, in fact, when we were in Scotland, we happened upon Roy Bridge, which was
right,
where her family or parents came from.
Yes.
And as you pointed out, we now live on Panola Station, and we've always felt rather a connection to St. Mary MacKillop.
Yes.
And what struck me really about her story was just how much common sense and practicality she had, and lived out her convictions. There's a lot that, even though she was well before my time, there's a lot that we can learn from somebody like that today.
Yes.
And when we think of role models, we're pretty lucky in this community to have somebody so close to look to.
I think that's absolutely spot on. I think she really is a true blue Australian, a good old Aussie battler, and she was always on the side of the Aussie battlers herself. She was very persevering in adversity, and she did suffer many hardships. And I think, at the time that she was made a saint, you had people like Kevin Rudd and Paul Keating and a number of, Julia Gillard, a number of people acknowledged, that she was a very true blue Australian. She was human, she was vulnerable, but she was full of faith. Mm. And she trusted that, if she acted with integrity and tried to listen to what God was asking of her, then she knew that she was doing the right thing. And she had great patience just to enable things to take their course in God's time, not in her time.
Mm.
And the congregation, to go back to that earlier point, it did spread rapidly throughout South Australia, then right across Australia, in every state in Australia, including Tasmania, which is where I'm from, and New Zealand as well. And then we've got a community of over 30 sisters in Ireland. So over time, Irish sisters came out as missionaries to Australia. And then after Vatican Council II, they had the choice of going back to their homeland, which they did.
Mm.
But they went back as Sisters of St. Joseph, and they work in, as much as they can according to their gift and, their capacity in Ireland. And then we have had sisters in Scotland, and we've now had to close that house there. But, the connection has been made, and we've got sisters in Peru as well. So that was one of our outreach communities. And, we've got some Peruvian sisters working there too.
Mm.
So Mary McKillop was very intent on working with the poor. And when you were talking about Panola Station there, there's a lovely story that Mary McKillop was... there used to be an Aboriginal camp, I think, near Panola Station. And Mary McKillop... used to teach some of the Aboriginal children alongside her own cousins, the Cameron children.
Mm.
And the story is told of this little Nancy Bruce, whose descendants are here in Panola as well. And one of them's a volunteer at the Mary McKillop Centre there, that she would teach her about God while she was, teaching the children. And she used to brush her hair and groom her. And, that family now have got... children who they've done very well.
Mm.
And it's just an illustration that's been borne out that Mary McKillop did believe that education empowers people, and that's what she wanted. She believed that for women they needed to take their place in society, and for men they needed, particularly in those days, they needed to learn accounting and their sums and things.
Yes.
And the women used to, they needed to know how to run a house and mend clothes and cook, do domestic things. So she tried to, she was very much a contemporary person. And I think that that kind of person, has a contemporary kind of value in today's society.
Certainly. Yes. Yeah, Sister Sue, it's been 6 years... You've spent with us here in Panola. Have you enjoyed your time?
I've loved every minute of it, yes. I'll be very sad to move on, actually, and I certainly move on with mixed emotions. But, from the very first, Loretta and I came together and we were very warmly welcomed by the people. But I think, we both agree that we've received far more from the people here than we've given.
Mm.
We've just been so well accepted. We feel that we belong very much to this community, and that over time the volunteers have just kept that centre alive, and the purpose of the centre is to keep the story of Mary McKillop and Julian Tennyson Woods alive, and they've done that brilliantly.
Mm.
And anything that we've contributed has really only been in a supportive role, because they have carried... they've carried that story, they've carried the spirit of Mary McKillop with them, and I think it's almost tangible around here. So I've loved all of that. and I've loved the opportunity to meet people just in their own kind of world, if you like. Mm. And that's rare when you're teaching in school. Often you're teaching, the children go home, and you meet the parents in much more official kind of capacities. But you know, this has been just a very just a lovely, you know, warm, beautiful, accepting community.
And the road takes you a little further east.
That's right. Yes, I'll be going to Melbourne. Yes, and taking on a leadership role there, and that will be a pastoral role as well, really, with the sisters there. Yes.
Yeah.
So we talk about leadership, but it's really, it's kind of servant leadership, if you like. It's not very high powered in the sense that other people would see it as a, you know, anything more than it is. It's just a role that's where they needed a sister to, you know, to respond to the needs of other sisters. And so certainly, that's what I'll be doing, probably working more with our other sisters of St. Joseph than I have done with the people here.
Mm.
Yes.
For people who might be interested in getting to know more of the work of the Sisters of St. Joseph, or even becoming a volunteer or getting involved themselves, is there the potential or the capacity for people to do that?
Absolutely, yes. It would be wonderful, really. We've always got, spaces of volunteers down at the Mary MacKillop Panola Centre, and all people need to do is to contact the centre there and, you know, to have a passion, I think, for the spirit of Mary and Julian, you know, that kind of outreach to the poor, and also keeping that story alive, really. So the people down at the centre there, we welcome so many tourists and visitors each year, and pilgrims come, and we introduce them to the story, and the museum itself tells the story. So we're always looking for volunteers who would meet people and show them around, and, you know, hospitality, I think, is one of the hallmarks of that place down there.
Mm. Mm. Good. Through the wonders of today's modern technology, I jumped on the website, and, of course, you're on social media as well now.
Right.
And I read that one of the, I suppose, the ethos, perhaps, quoted on your website is, and it says, being Josephite is reverence for the dignity of all, humble and compassionate, service of those made poor, and courage in the face of adversity.
Yes, and Mary MacKillop was all of those things. And so the sisters who follow her, you know, we try to live by those ideals. But I think people who are captured, who are drawn to, you know, to Mary MacKillop's story and her spirit, I think they live by those qualities as well. And they're qualities that are very much needed in our world today.
Mm.
So it's not just for the Sisters of St. Joseph, it's for people who really are drawn into that spirit. Yeah. And many people are today. We have other people who connected a little bit more formally with us, and we call them associates, and also we have people who enter into covenant relationship too, just to live by the spirit. Mm. I just, you know, stress that there's something very special about Panola, you know, particularly in the story of our congregation. It's where it began, but it's not just history. I think it's a living history that has been really safeguarded by the people in this community. And that's what I admire, and I think that's what, it's almost infectious, really, around here.
And you might be heading over east, but this certainly won't be the last we'll see of you.
No, oh no, definitely not. I hope not. No, I would intend to, you know, come back as, you know, from time to time if I can. And yes, in Melbourne, of course, they've got another heritage centre there too, and that's where Mary MacKillop ran a Providence, so I'll actually, you know, be going into her area as well. She was born in Fitzroy in Melbourne, yes. However, I think she used to barrack for Collingwood. I don't think she was a Fitzroy supporter. I'll tell all the children that, yes.
Mm. Well, they have to have some faults, don't we?
Right. Mm.
Well, a little bit of Panola staying, yes, with you.
Oh,
and
very much.
And you've certainly, yes, made your mark here in Panola. And thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thank you. And thank you for the privilege, really, of speaking with you.
It's a pleasure.